It was a pleasure for me. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and let us directly jump into the subject. When we talk about cardiac MRI in ICD patients, in the last decade, we talked mainly about safety. I think we did a great progress in this field. A lot of research has been done. We have identified the risk. We have developed special precaution measures. And the manufacturers, the active device manufacturers, did a great job developing new MRI conditional devices. What we are talking now in cardiac MRI in ICD patients, here the main issue is image quality. First, let me quickly summarize the main safety risks. First, it's the inhibition of the stimulation output in pacemaker-dependent patients. This is nicely seen on this in vitro diagram. You see the gradient echo sequence with the spikes. And the gradient echo sequence, the gradient echoes can perfectly mimic the amplitude and the frequency of the cardiac stimulation of the heart. And so you see a complete inhibition of pacemaker output. And only when the MRI sequence is stopped, the DDD mode is resumed again. So a highly undesirable situation in an absolutely pacemaker-dependent patient. The second main risk is the induction of voltage at the lead tip with the possible induction of VT and VF. If you have conductive material in a moving magnetic field, you will induce voltage. This is physics, and it can be avoided. You can only decrease the amount of voltage, but it will never be zero. And this is a real risk, and I show you the only main complication I had doing MRI on device patients for more than 20 years. This is a pacemaker patient who had an acute myocardial inferior infarction 4 days ago, underwent emergency MRI of the brain. You see the ECG. You see, it's really hard to tell what's going on the ECG stripe because of the artifacts due to the RF and gradient fields. And the pulse oximetry shows the situation. At this point, the patient developed ventricular fibrillation. And our hypothesis is that due to the subacute infarction, we had vulnerable myocardium, and so the small voltages that will be induced during MRI have been large enough to stimulate the heart. Risk number three is lead heating. Due to the lead, an antenna in a moving magnetic field can pick up the energy, and if the resonance criteria are met, this energy will be multiplied, and it can lead to considerable temperature increases up to 100 degrees Celsius. And this can lead to tissue damage at the lead tip and loss of capture, which again would be a problem in a pacemaker-dependent patient. And risk number four is the patient is not protected against VT or VF during MRI because no shock delivery is possible during MRI. Of course, prior to MRI, you would enable the therapy options, but even if you want to shock in MRI, it's not possible because the transformer is saturated. It's a strong static magnetic field. And this is the very high risk situation in an ICD patient, a patient with a conventional ICD who is absolutely pacemaker dependent. Why is this a problem? You see here, ICD patients is a conventional ICD. This is the start of the MRI exam. You see the MRI fields are picked up by the ICD, and are taken for ventricular fibrillation and ventricular tachycardia. And if we go on, the marker channel will be filled, and the ICD will try to shock. Of course, you have enabled the therapy option, but in conventional MRIs, in about 10% of devices, you will have a power on reset due to the electromagnetic interference. And in power on reset, the therapy options will be reactivated. And this is now what happens. The ICD will try again and again to shock, but this is not possible. As I said, the transformer is saturated. There's a practical shortcut of the battery. A lot of energy and current is flowing through the battery. It will heat up, and you will get a total failure of the system. And in a totally, absolutely pacemaker-dependent patient, ICD patient, this will be a very problematic situation, but it's not that easy to manage. So a really great progress is the introduction of the MRI conditional devices. So what are the main benefits and which modifications have been done? These are the major points which have dramatically increased safety in ICD patients. We have no more electrical resets due to improved protection of the internal circuits to minimize electromagnetic interference. And this is very, very important because these electrical resets will put you in trouble, as I've shown you before. And the second point is the voltage induction into the leads is significantly reduced due to modification of the input capacities and protective diodes in the pacemaker and the ICD. And this is also very important. Of course, the voltage induction is not zero, but it's decreased to a level that, given the very short duration in the sub-millisecond range, stimulation of the heart is very, very unlikely, and to my knowledge, has not been reported in an MRI conditional ICD system so far. The other modifications are lead modifications leading to reduced heating of the leads, and actually even more important, the manufacturers have tested their well-known leads and have identified the condition for safe use, so a lot of conventional leads could be back-labeled as MRI conditional. So we have talked about safety. What about image quality? Image quality in pacemaker patients is not a problem at all. You see the steady-state free precession sequences in a patient with a congenitally corrected transposition of the great arteries. You see a great image quality. The SSFP sequence, you know that is our working horse, a fast sequence, good signal-to-noise ratio, and a brilliant contrast between the blood pool and the myocardium. And you see in pacemaker patients, it works perfectly. The leads don't bother us, the generator don't bother us. The same is true for viability imaging in pacemaker patients. It works well. You can see the inflammatory scars in this patient here in the basal septum and in the basal lateral view, and this patient turned out to have a chronic active myocarditis. So what about ICDs? In ICDs, life is not that easy. You see a lot of artifacts. Maybe we can darken the room a little bit. As a radiologist, I'm a little bit sensitive with the contrast environment. You see this so-called stripe or web artifacts, thank you very much, originating from the generator of the ICD. And they go far away into the chest, obscuring large parts of the heart. And the reason for that is the transformer in the ICD. It has an iron core and a lot of susceptibility, and this will disturb the homogeneity of the magnetic field. And this SSFP sequence, this critically depends on a homogenic magnetic field to preserve the transverse magnetization during rapid stimulation. So SSFP in ICD patients is a big problem, and the solution is we switch to K-space segmented gradient echo sequences. Actually, it's a step backwards. It's an old sequence design, but it does not depend as much on the homogeneity of the magnetic field. The image quality, we are not enthusiastic about it. It's not as nice as in the normal SSFP sequence, but I think it's reasonable and you can obtain diagnostic image quality for wall motion abnormalities in the vast majority of patients. This is shown in this example, SSFP. You have this web or stripe artifacts I've shown you before, and you have this dark flow void artifacts if the blood crosses an off-resonance point in this SSFP sequences. It will lose signal, and this will obscure the endocardial borders, and you get rid of this problem using gradient echo sequences, and it's even better if you use it in a contrast-enhanced manner. And it's especially the anterior segment with us obscured in the presence of the ICD. So this was seen imaging, but what we are really excited about is lead enhancement MRI. This is a game changer because it enables us to evaluate the myocardium, and you know you can see all kinds of potentially arrhythmogenic substrates, sarcoid, myocarditis, fibrosis in hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, a subendocardial inferior infarction. And in this patient with recurrent ventricular tachycardia, this scar was found in the inferior wall, which was presumed to be inflammatory, and this was a substrate for the VTs. And for this, lead enhancement is very, very important. But the bad thing is we have problems in ICD patients with these hyper-intense artifacts induced by the ICD generator, and again, it's the transformer who induces susceptibility problems. And if you look at these artifacts, it critically depends from the distance of the generator to the myocardial segment. So the artifacts are most pronounced in the anterior wall down to the apical region and are less pronounced in the inferior wall. If you want to understand these artifacts and if you want to know how to interpret the images and what solutions are possible, I have to bother you a little bit with MRI physics. You know, lead enhancement relies on the inversion recovery technique. This means the longitudinal magnetization is flipped by an inversion pulse. And then the recovery of this longitudinal relaxation occurs, and it will be faster in the infarcted myocardium because there's more gadolinium in it. And if you do the imaging at the point where the vital, the normal myocardium crosses the x-axis, you will get a brilliant contrast between normal and pathologic myocardium with an enlarged extracellular space. This is a brilliant contrast, and this is really the powerful tool we have in MRI. So how does it work? In the ideal world, in a static magnetic field of 64 megahertz, the protons will precipitate at a frequency of 64 megahertz. So you need an inversion pulse of 64 megahertz, and you will get a nice flip of the longitudinal magnetization. However, the human body is not the ideal world. We have a lot of different tissues with different susceptibility, bone, air, muscle. So we have slight changes of the precipitation frequency of the protons. And to overcome this problem, usually a standard inversion pulse with a spectral bandwidth of 1 kilohertz is used. And so you can cover all protons and you can nicely flip them down. In the presence of an ICD, we have a problem. Due to the disturbance of the homogeneity of the magnetic field, the precipitation of the protons have huge differences. Yeah, you can see it in this image. And the standard inversion pulse will not reach all protons, and only part of them are flipped. And what happens now is you get images like this. Now, because in this region, the process of flipping the inversion pulse and nulling off the myocardial signal, the myocardium in this region remains bright. And this will obscure true disease, or it can mimic disease. And to overcome this problem, we use the wideband inversion pulse technique, a really good and brilliant idea. It's an inversion pulse with a spectral bandwidth which is 4 times as usual. And with this, you cover all protons, or most protons, in the region of interest. You can flip them all down, and you can get now a nice nulling of the myocardium, which is the basis for this technique. So this is shown again, normal technique, white pulse, and you see now nice dark myocardium. Now this is not a true disease. Another example, white pulse, and again, now a nice suppression of the myocardium. Other example, standard technique, a lot of these hyperintense artifacts, which makes impossible to interpret this image, with a white pulse application, you can see this was an artifact, and here is a true pathology in the lateral border, and in the other same patient, in the apical region, here is a septum artifact, it's dark, and here remains a hypertensive lesion. This is a true scar, and this is confirmed by the electroanatomical mapping. Last example, very bad image quality, and now you see this large subendocardial scar and the septum. So this really works. The only drawback is if you have single-void artifacts. Single-void artifact means in the closed vicinity of the device, you have an in-voxel dephasing, and so you have no signal at all. And this signal will never come back, and so no technique will work to restore image quality. Usually, the single-void artifacts are only very near to the generator and don't bother you at the heart. And only if you have a situation like this, a very low-lying ICD, you have the problem that this flow-void dark artifact will also obscure the heart, and this technique of wideband will not work anymore. And this is nicely shown here. The critical distance between device and myocardium is about 5 centimeters. In this area, we have flow-void, single-void artifacts. If it is more, actually, we do quite well. So this wideband inversion pulse technique in light enhancement significantly improves image quality by reducing hyperintensity artifacts, which might mimic or obscure myocardial scar tissue. And usually, there's no free lunch in MRIs. There's always a flip side. But here, it does not increase scan time. It minimally increases the SOR value, but in light enhancement imaging, this is not significant, so it does not jeopardize the safety profile of MRI. The only drawbacks are it does not eliminate the single-word artifacts in the close vicinity of the ICD, and this is actually the major drawback, you can't do it yourself. You cannot program it on the, yourself. It must be implemented by the MRI manufacturer, which is not a big job because it's really only a software problem. So in summary, cardiac MRI in ICD patients is safe with MRI conditional devices. It has a reasonable safety profile in conventional ICDs. However, there individual risk-benefit assessment and special precaution measures are necessary. Image quality is significantly impaired in CNSSFP sequences, so they should be replaced by gradient echo sequences, which provide a reasonable image quality in the vast majority of patients. Late enhancement in standard technique is a problem, but the image quality is really greatly improved by the wideband inversion pulse technique, which only can be highly recommended to use. It's a powerful diagnostic tool in electrophysiology, and it's ready for use in clinical practice. However, image quality is still a little bit the weak side, and here further technical developments are desirable. I'm very optimistic about improvements on the MRI sequence basis, and I'm curious if there are any rules from the manufacturers, if they can also provide solutions on the hardware basis to reduce susceptibility. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you so much for this very structured overview. Any questions from the audience, please? Yes, over there.
The susceptibility induced by the device is broad, the magnetic field, but it also shifts in a direction, and in some part you can account for this additional by shifting also the offset of your RF pulses. Do you also use this?
Yes, we do. Yeah, this is also a second possibility to improve image quality and to shift the artifact out of the region of interest.
Yeah, can I just, great presentation, thank you very much. With the wide band, do you increase the total energy? I mean, does that increase any aspect of safety?
It's only, you do, this is physics, because it's a wider bandwidth, but the increase is very, very small, and especially in late enhancement. Late enhancement is a low SOR application. It does not play a role.
Okay. And can you give us just a hint on, I mean, most of us are ablationists, so how can you image our ablation lesions? Do they look different than just a regular LGE, or how can we use that to optimize our ablation strategy, so ablation lesion imaging?
I think you should definitely use this wideband technique. It's easy to use. It's a simple software patch. When you ask Philips or Siemens, it's even a commercial solution. You can buy it, and it's really worthwhile to use it. And I would use it in every patient.